right, we're going to bring Senate Finance to order. Apologize for the delay. The House or the Senate floor went longer than anticipated today. Today we do want to hear from the public, and we are going to take up House Bill 4, In-State Gas Line Development Corporation. We do ask, we have a lot of people signed up to testify, so we'll ask that you try to limit your testimony to about 2 minutes. The testimony, then we'll take this bill back up tomorrow. So with that, is there anything to come before the committee? Let's see, Senator Kelly is here, Senator Olson is here, Senator Hoffman is here, Senator Dunleavy is here. I saw Senator Fairclough, and she's not here, but I'm sure we'll be coming back shortly. So we do have a quorum to get started on business. If there's nothing to come before us at this time, then we'll go right into the public testimony. Let's start. This is a familiar name, Harold Hines in Anchorage. Harold, you're our first one today, and it's good to hear from you again. So if you could please put your name on the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and committee members for the opportunity to testify before you today on House Bill 4. My name is Harold Hines. I'm an Anchorage resident. I've been involved in the oil and gas industry since I came to Alaska in 1969. I have considerable background as both a technical and executive person from the oil industry side with North Slope Gas and the issues related to it. I also served as Commissioner of Natural Resources under Walter J. Hickel. I was his gas salesman across the Pacific for a year in addition. And most recently, I just finished up a little over 8 years as the head of the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority, ANGDA. So I'm pretty familiar with the in-state issues, and I have not spent a lot of time on the legislation this year, but I'm very familiar with the issues that were raised last year, and I've had enough of a chance to skim through it that I would like to just offer you a couple comments very briefly to explain to you why I would urge you to pass House Bill 4 at this time. Number one, I believe there's no debate over the importance of the in-state gas issue. It is, from an Alaskan perspective, an integral part of what do we do with North Slope Gas and all those other decisions. What I think is glossed over a lot of times is the levels of complexity, the analysis of the alternatives, and frankly the fact that whatever decisions need to be made here probably should be well-founded in business principles rather than political principles. The current situation in my mind with AGDC and the fact that it is operating under what I would call incomplete legislative authorities, with the demise of ANGDA, it is the only entity you have from a public point of view to deal with the in-state issues, and I believe the status quo for it is not acceptable. Probably the biggest fault I would find is the fact that you currently have a board of directors who was appointed as the AHFC board of directors, and I believe they are very competent and capable in that regard, but I fail to note any real expertise or appreciation of the issues involved in a major gas pipeline, and especially when we talk about an in-state gas pipeline that's measured in $5 to $10 billion. I think that is the biggest strength I see in House Bill 4, is that I think by your passage at this time, you make a clear statement that the legislature is not driving any particular project. It is not, at this point, appointing anybody as the czar or supremo on the in-state gas, but it is creating a public corporation of the state in a proper framework to take on all the different roles necessary, and providing a business-like board of directors structure to make those decisions. The legislature maintains control through the approval of governor nominees to the board. It also maintains control through the process of setting forth funds, the allotment of funds, but it leaves then under this structure to the board of directors of this new public corporation of the state the ability to decide the crucial issues of what project, where it goes, is it attractive, who do you partner with, and a dozen other things I could probably think of at the time. So I believe the status quo is unacceptable. I believe House Bill 4 represents a good approach to going forward. I think it is important to go forward. And with that, in the essence of time, I'll conclude my testimony.
Great. Well, Harold, I appreciate that testimony. I know you've spent many, many years as chairman of the ANGDA, and you've been studying gas pipelines in Alaska for some time. So it's good to hear that you do support this this bill, House Bill 4. We do have a question for you as well from Senator Hoffman. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hines, the sponsor has stated on several occasions that we want to make this get gas to all Alaskans, and I guess with your work, your prior work, I wonder if you could look at the legislation and see if you could come up with any recommended changes to strengthening the bill so that we can get gas to all Alaskans. The one that I point out is on page 13 that the sponsor has suggested under creation of subsidiaries. On lines 30 and 31, he says, including delivery of natural gas, propane, and other products to coastal communities for the state. You know, I think that is excellent language, but there is no really a connect on how all of this gets accomplished in getting gas to rural areas. And we've had several conversations, and I'm wondering if you could take a look at Senate Bill 4 to see what you might suggest in strengthening any sections of the bill so that this bill truly is for gas for all of Alaskans.
Thank you, Senator, through the chair. Basically, I guess the best way I see for this to be meaningful to 100% of the citizens of Alaska is for the board of directors of this to reflect a commitment to making that happen. As you know, I served with probably well over a dozen board members who were my board in ANGDA over a period of a number of years. And it's the attitude of that board that I think will be decisive in how the issues work out. I don't want to oversimplify the fact that there are very difficult issues here. Business relationships have to be struck with the producers. Business relationships have to be struck with a number of entities throughout the state. As you well know from your area, if people are interested in trying to find ways to make things work, you can. There are things that can be done. I see nothing in this legislation that prohibits this organization and this board from working towards it. In the past, ANGDA was criticized for overstepping its bounds. I guess my feeling was that we were well in our bounds of trying to operate for the betterment of all Alaskans. And I think this bill embodies that same spirit. I have heard nothing from the sponsors that would indicate to me that they are taking such a tight view of what this corporation can do that an activist board can't address all those issues of concern, not only to urban, but rural Alaska, as well as the interior of Alaska.
Anything else, Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and I failed to mention Senator Bishop and Senator Fairclough are here as well, so we have a full committee. Any other questions for Mr. Hines? Okay. Harold, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yep. Okay, I noticed here I I just started with the first sheet that I had. I'm starting with the off-net folks. We'll get back to the LIOs here as soon as we're done with the off-net folks. So let's go on now to the mayor of Denali Borough, Clay Walker.
Hi there. Good afternoon, Chairman Meyer and members of the committee, and I thank you for this opportunity to testify today on House Bill 4. I am Clay Walker, the mayor of the Denali Borough. The Denali Borough at its March meeting moved to comment positively on passage of HB 4. They will also consider a supporting resolution Wednesday night, but as time is of the essence, I would like to offer the borough support to HB 4 and the ASAP project it helps forward. On this day, April 8th, we are once again reminded of the high energy demands of life here in Alaska. This morning we had 30 below here. The high costs of energy are, I believe, the main headwind facing our economy, and a long-term solution bringing affordable, clean, reliable energy to Alaskans is clearly needed. ASAP's routing with its multiple takeoff points brings the gas to the people, and we are, you know, an energy-rich state in which the people are starving for energy. So please do support HB 4 to bring the energy to the people, and please do so this session. Thank you for your service to Alaska.
Thank you, Mayor Walker. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, the next off-neck is Merrick Pierce. Merrick, if you could identify yourself and if any affiliation, and then provide us your testimony.
Hi, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Merrick Pierce, I've served on the AGPA board and as also as the CFO for the last half dozen years. My comments today are on my own behalf. I recall that when AGEA was passed, there was little attention paid to what was happening with shale gas in the Lower 48. If the legislature had understood the significance of the shale gale, Alaskans would not have wasted several hundred million dollars in half a decade studying a project to Lower 48 that never had a prayer of being built. The parallel between the wasted effort under AGEA and House Bill 4 is stunning. For House Bill 4 to pass, the legislature needs to completely ignore the fundamentals about the massive gas reserves under the Cook Inlet. It's really simple. No one's going to build a $10 billion pipeline to convey gas to a region that has a 200-year gas supply. Senate Resources, in my view, did not do its job. This is a resource question. Resources should have heard from all the experts that could have detailed why they believe 19 trillion cubic feet of gas exists under the inlet. Instead, they only spent about 4 hours before signing off on a bill with a $225 million fiscal note. In the private sector, we'd spend months on due diligence before signing off on a multi-hundred million dollar investment. I'm going to list some of the other significant problems with House Bill 4 in a very topical summary. First, House Bill 4 opens the state to treble damages under AS 4390-440. A prudent person would come to terms with TransCanada on this issue to ensure the state of Alaska does not incur hundreds of millions of dollars of liability. That's a complicated question that needs to be worked on. Second, the cost of gas from the bolt line is 2 to 3 times Henry Hub or the AECO Hub price. This ensures no export market. The only potential market left is an in-state market, but the finance charges for this project are not supportable by rail belt consumers. Let's assume a bolt line gets built with a price tag of $10 billion with a 75-25 debt-to-equity ratio and 11% return on the equity. The cost of this debt and equity service is $560 million per year. This cost, applied equally over 400,000 Alaskans and the rail belt consumers, would cost each Alaskan about $1,400 per year, a cost that greatly exceeds most permanent fund dividend checks. And worse, these finance charges would leave the Alaska economy to foreign investors. House Bill 4 funds a project that has the wrong route. Ensure no gas riles in Air Force Base or National Missile Defense at Fort Greely. It ignores the research that was done by Fedco and Dr. Paul Metz that found that gas needs to be made available along the Richardson route where the greatest mineral resource potential lies. And House Bill 4 overturns a border initiative passed in 2002 that created anger. Passing this bill says 138,000 Alaskans were wrong. House Bill 4 also ignores the AML Resolution 20-12-01 passed nearly unanimously that supports the Alaska gas line and rejects the bullet line. The take-home message is we'd be better off rejecting this bill and fully funding the short-term solutions like a small-bore pipeline from Big Lake to Fairbanks or LNG trucking. Spending hundreds of millions of dollars studying a clearly uneconomic project is a waste of public dollars. And with that, I conclude my testimony, and I'm happy to take questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Pierce. Don't see any questions. So appreciate your testimony today. Okay, Terry Heineman.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Hello. My name is Terry Heineman. I live north of Healy in Denali Borough, and I would like to express my gratitude in allowing me the opportunity to speak and address the Senate this afternoon. I've lived in Alaska for over 40 years. I have two children born and raised in Alaska, and I don't believe that my length of residency gives me any extra consideration or favors, but I do have a strong interest, and I think my length of residency proves that I have a very strong interest and concern in the Alaskan economy and future. My personal belief is that waiting for the large petroleum producers to decide on moving with a liquefied natural gas to market via a large diameter pipeline, while energy costs for residents of Alaska continue to soar, is not an option we can afford. The Alaska Standalone Pipeline is the only plan that is more than just an idea, with actual assets, including an environmental impact statement. The Alaska Standalone Pipeline is also the only plan designed to focus on energy to the residents of the state. The other ideas put more emphasis on moving product to foreign markets and filling government accounts. The resources of the state are to meet the residents' needs before exportation. The residents are suffering with energy, or the needs for energy. Alaska Standalone Pipeline could provide access to gas, methane, and propane both, directly via pipeline and indirectly via river, rail, road, ocean, and through the grid as electricity. I've heard many questions. Why are our gasoline and heating oil prices so high in this state? We own the oil. The answer to that question and many others is simple. The cost to refine with expensive energy in-state compared to refineries in Lower 48 using much lower cost energy such as natural gas is just one example of the many, I could go on as far as costs go, but the bottom line is the increased cost of doing business in this state is passed on to consumers. With gas deposits in Cook Inlet dwindling faster than discovery and development, there is talk of importing natural gas to meet the energy needs of South Central. Alaska Standalone Pipeline could provide the energy needs for the whole state for the next 100 years. The time to move a project forward is now, and there is only one real pipeline. That's the Alaska Standalone Project, and I encourage you to pass House Bill 4, and thank you very much for the time.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Heineman. Appreciate your testimony. All right, let's see. Let's go to Deantha Crockett.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you for joining us, Deantha.
Great. Thank you for having me. For the record, my name is Deantha Crockett. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Miners Association. We're a statewide association that represents the 6 large metal mines in the state, our 1 operating coal mine, hundreds of placer miners, contractors, vendors, anybody that really does business with the mining industry. I know the intent of this legislation and certainly what the sponsors felt when they introduced it was to address the what is pretty much dire situation for energy for all of Alaskans, especially in the rural areas, but and for that reason alone, AMA would believe it would be worthy of supporting. But to move further into the benefits of my industry specifically, we are also struggling with energy at a substantial level. It's really hard for my members to go back to their management and shareholders and explain why it's so costly to operate a mine here. Even right now, and for the past couple of years, we've had really high commodity prices, but these companies are facing a constant cost-benefit analysis, and Alaska is simply really expensive to operate in. And energy is a huge part of that equation. Mills are very, very energy intensive, and we pay really large energy bills each month. I can tell you that companies looking to invest here definitely look at that as part of their cost-benefit analysis. In addition to needing that energy, really, we feel like we're part of the solution as well. When you look at something like the Susitna Dam or like the in-state gas pipeline, you're going to need to justify such a large expenditure and such a large project with, people that actually need to use that energy, and that's where mines come in. I just got done telling you about how much energy it requires to operate our mines. We're really part of the solution as well. We know that our mines open right now use hundreds and hundreds of megawatts, and the ones that are on the horizon are posed to do the same. Some of those that are on the horizon have looked at ways to bring natural gas to where they're located, and which in turn can benefit the communities that surround their projects. So something like HB4 that pursues moving this forward and getting us closer than where we've ever been is really, really beneficial, not only for the state, but for my industry as well. So I'm hoping you guys can move this out of committee and support this bill.
All right. Thank you, Deantha.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Looks like Bill Sheffield. I'm assuming this is Governor Sheffield.
Yes, I'm here. I'm going to take off speaker, see if you can hear me now. Is that all right?
Okay. Yes, we can hear you loud and clear, Governor.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for calling on me. I've probably been across the state many times all winter and this spring, talking in favor of HB4 for the gas pipeline. We've been talking about this for about 40 years, and we haven't done anything about it. It's time that we do it. And my interest comes from being an Alaskan for more than 60 years, and the fact that I care about the long-term well-being of our present and future citizens. I think House Bill 4 may well be the most important vote that the legislature will consider this year. If this bill passes, it's another important step to delivering a long-term, affordable source of energy to a large part of Alaska's population. It'll lead to jobs during construction and ongoing jobs production delivery afterwards. It also has a possibility of allowing the Ingram plant on the Kenai Peninsula to reopen. That was $325,000 a year jobs when it shut down. That's hard to duplicate, you know. It could help Flint Hills Refinery, somebody already has said here today, in Fairbanks, to return to full operations. That eliminates having to ship three tankers a month into the port of Anchorage to feed the jet fuel for the Anchorage Airport, and helps out the railroad, and it gives them the freight business. So there are all kinds of extra things that happen when you have gas. There are also important benefits. The lady from the Mining Association just talked to mine operations at Live and Good. They need power. The Donlin Creek Gold Prospect needs power before they can start to build the mine. If you get the Donlin Creek, you're getting closer to Bethel, where 25,000 people live. So when you create thousands of jobs and lower the cost of living for Alaskans, you've had a pretty good day. And Dan Foskey and his group, AGDC, have done a great job. They have an environmental impact statement, EIS. They have the right-of-way approvals, almost all of them, for the entire line. We got real engineers out there working on it hard all the time. And so this is not just a concept anymore. This is a project that we can do. And passing House Bill 4 is critical to moving it further along, get into open season, where sellers and buyers can be identified and all the questions that everybody has can be answered. In my mind, gas is for Alaskans to use, separate from the billions and oil revenues we have depended on to provide services to the public through the state's operating and capital budgets. You know, we were given the right to be a state because we had resources and we could take care of ourselves. And it's time that we started to do that and have an in-state gas line and lower the cost of utilities. Once you get gas on the ground in Fairbanks, and I'm winding down now, and South Central, for years you can extend that service to other areas, to other people, and it's the best thing that we could do in the state of Alaska. And thank you, and you're to be commended for the hard work that you've already done, Mr. Chair, and members of the Senate Committee, Finance Committee, and other committees in the House have spent hours on this bill. They've done a lot of work presenting it. So this is our chance to really do something for Alaskans. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Governor, and thank you for your testimony. Again, thank you for everyone who's online here for staying with us, and I, again, apologize for the late start. Okay. Well, thank you again, Governor Sheffield. Also, I failed to mention we do have the speaker, Speaker Chenault, Representative Chenault, in the audience as well. Of course, he's the sponsor of House Bill 4. Okay, so let's continue on now. We'll go to the Anchorage LIO. Cindy Roberts.
Co-Chairman Kelly, Meyer, and committee members, thank you for this opportunity to testify on this proposition of the ASAP gas pipeline and its administrative structure as now defined through House Bill 4. My name is Cindy Roberts, and except for 4 years in Juneau with the second Hickel administration, I've been a resident in Anchorage since 1971. Last January, I published the second edition of a book called Cracking the Code, A Citizen's Guide to the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline Discussion. My personal credentials are not in micromanagement of legal language. They are in commitment to Alaska and Alaskans, in understanding the language of taking our natural gas resource to our communities in the state and to the global market in order to make our gas affordable to Alaskans of this and future generations. With all due respect to those who have testified earlier in this session, especially Governor Sheffield and the commissioner I personally worked for in Harold Hines, I beg to differ with their analysis on this legislation. As you and the committee examine the details of this bill, please do not lose focus on some of the big issues. Number one is the economics of this proposed ASAP pipeline are compromised by the legal limits imposed by AGEA, with a maximum throughput of 500 million standard cubic feet per day. We will not only have higher cost per unit for non-industrial use, we will skip the value-added option as the liquids will not be transportable in this line. I wonder why is this seen as maximum benefit? And I certainly question to whom. Second point is that this fiscally conservative legislature is filtering reality. Do not lose sight of the $500 million already committed to AGEA. More than $300 million of the inducements has been invested to this date. And as the public and many of us have asked, what results have been reported to the public and to you? Can this truly continue? Number three, two open seasons for AGEA have not been disclosed. The September 2012 yielded at least 200% interest by willing purchasers. So why is a third open season on a smaller line a wise investment? Our economic future is at a watershed moment thanks to HB 4 and SB 21. Before you vote on this bill and send it to the governor for signature, once again, read the 2011 Alaska Gas Port Authority report from Wood Mackenzie and look at the $75 to $400 billion to the plus side of the equation that will result from a large-scale pipeline to a deep water export facility, specifically in Valdez. Your math skills and your reputations are in question. Please vote no on this bill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Cindy, or Ms. Roberts. Okay, there should be a Rick Rogers there as well.
Yes, good afternoon, Co-Chairs. Kelly Meyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rick Rogers, the Executive Director of the Resource Development Council. RDC supports HB 4. I think it's important to reflect on the diversity of our membership to appreciate the significance of our support. We represent producers of energy resources, including companies of all sizes, developing and exploring for oil and gas on the North Slope, Cook Inlet, and Frontier Basins. We represent coal producers and potential coal producers in Alaska. We represent renewable resource developers, including wind, biomass, and hydro. And we represent energy utilities with their mission to provide affordable and uninterrupted gas and power to Alaskans. And finally, we represent energy consumers, both rural and urban, commercial and residential, existing and potential, including some of the large mine projects that Yantha Crockett eloquently described in her testimony. But given this diversity, RDC looked hard at HB4 to make sure it did not pit one energy resource against the other. We do not feel it's appropriate for the government to be choosing winners and losers, and we feel that best energy solutions for Alaskans are the ones that provide the best value to consumers, balancing low costs as well as the reliability over the long term. So the invisible hand of the free market will result in the best energy solutions for Alaskans. And HB4 provides the organizational structure and tools and resources to advance an in-state gas project to an open season. At open season, the project will compete for firm transportation commitments, and it will succeed or fail on its economic merits. HB4 provides an appropriate balance by providing public sector support in the early stages sufficient to bring the project to an open season where the economics will determine the project's fate. Like many Alaskans, we remain hopeful that a larger diameter line to Tidewater will be sanctioned, making the development of the standalone gas project as envisioned unnecessary. We don't view, however, that HB4 and the standalone project are a threat to a larger gas line. We view it as an alternative means of delivering gas to Alaskans should a larger project not be sanctioned. Should a larger line move forward, HB4 positions the authority to help expand intrastate gas transportation from the offtake points required in AGEA. So given our growing concerns on the unsustainable growth in state spending, we do encourage consideration of modifying the enabling statute for AGDC to consider sunsetting the agency should future circumstances render its mission obsolete or unachievable. While initial tariff projections by AGDC look encouraging, until an open season is held, we really don't know the viability of this project. Delivering reliable, low-cost, cost-effective energy to Alaskans is critical to the future prosperity of our people. HB4 is an appropriate means to advance the project to a point where the free market can determine its viability. Thank you, Chairman, for the opportunity to comment and all your hard work during this session.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, now we're going to go to Matt Sue. It looks like Burt Cottle.
Yes, Senator Myers, I want to thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Burt Cottle. I currently live in Wasilla and half of the past 2 years, and before that I spent 37 years in Valdez. I do currently serve on the Alaska Gas Line Port Authority, but I'm here today to speak to you as an Alaskan and also to testify against passage of House Bill 4 as it is currently written. I'd like to raise 5 points. First, I would ask that we use the current TAPS oil line as an example of success, having been in operation for over 35 years now, the success being that it is a large volume line that goes to Tidewater, that the TAPS line was built to export product, sell product, and make a profit and pay for the line. As a small in-state line would not have worked and would not have paid for itself. Number two, that 3 years ago, I attended a presentation by NSTAR at a petroleum club in Anchorage that was, in fact, attended by well over 200, almost 300 people. The reference of a small in-state line was discussed at that meeting by NSTAR and was said not to make economic sense, and that unless it was subsidized or unless there was a lot more users, that NSTAR would not take on a project like that. Number three, large volume line must go to Tidewater. Whether that line Tidewater is in Kenai, Point McKenzie, or Prince William Sound, that will be to determined by the project and the economics of the project. Number four, waste energy. Hopefully we've learned our lesson from the past And we have learned that if we were to do the oil line again, we would have turbines at Attican Pass and Thompson Pass. And we also would have learned how to recoup the waste energy that goes up the stacks at the pump stations and at the oil terminal itself. On a large volume line, gas line, we need to make sure that we have discussions on waste energy and that we, when it's used properly, could light up part or all of the rail belt. And finally, indebtedness. I would ask that what is past will not put an indebtedness on my kids, my grandkids, and myself who plan on retiring here. Thank you, Senator.
Great. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Cottle. Okay. Is it Manny Escobrado?
No, sir. It's Manny Escobedo.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. My name is Manny Escobedo, and I firmly oppose House Bill 4. When was anything done in a hurry the best way to do something? In 2002, Alaskans voted for a gas line to Valdez, and so far we've produced nothing. Now we must do it by way of ASAP. Nice pun. Alaskans, when told of the options, understand that HB 4 is wrong. We would spend $10 billion to have natural gas to a few communities. We would pay for the line and the gas. No profits. Is that who we are as Alaskans? Imagine being in a room with the legislators that voted on TAPS. If we said we would build a small line to ship oil to a refinery close to Anchorage so that we could have cheaper gasoline, think of how bad a statement that is. Right now, we are dependent on our pipeline, and its volume is diminishing. We need to make money, not just spend it. Don't spend our money to appease a few. Spend it because we will make a return on our investment. I would like to believe that my legislators are better than this. The bullet line will not have liquid byproduct, butane, propane. It will be a charge for natural gas. That's all it will be. I spent 13 years in Prudhoe Bay drilling for oil. If you hit gas, you had a problem. There's just too much of it. Wouldn't it be great to just drill? And if you hit gas, you ship it down one line. If you hit oil, you ship it down another. It just goes to a separator first anyway. How could that be a bad thing? Here's another one. We want to study it more. How can anything be cheaper than going down the existing corridor? Nothing could be. We have experience along that route, and we will only do it better this time. Alaskans used to do for themselves. Now we wait to see if the oil companies will do it for us. With the financial situation in the lower 48, they're not going to do anything for us. We have to do it for ourselves. Be an Alaskan. Do the right thing. Make money for Alaskans first. Thank you.
Hey, great. Thank you, Manny.
You're welcome, sir.
All right, let's go to Fairbanks. Let's see. Jim Plackett in Fairbanks. Jim, are you with us?
Yeah, can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
Sure can.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for letting me testify in front of you. My name is Jim Plackey, and I am the membership and events coordinator for the Alliance and a 40-year resident of Fairbanks and a member of the Opera Engineers Local 302. HV4 and the Alaska Standalone Pipeline will provide the most cost-effective and time-sensitive schedule for developing a long-term affordable energy solution for Fairbanks and Alaska. SB 23 is the short-term energy solution for Fairbanks, and the long-term energy solution is HB4. Fairbanks and Alaska needs energy, and HB4 provides the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation to serve as Alaska's natural gas pipeline corporation, giving Alaskans the needed energy they need for space heating and economic survival. HB4 directs Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation to carry 500 million cubic feet per day pipeline from the North Slope to Fairbanks and South Central at the lowest possible cost without delay. HB4 provides Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation to consider other in-state natural gas projects, and participate for Alaskans a larger pipeline to Tidewater with an LNG export component, like the project advocated by the governor. HB 4 empowers HEDC to act on behalf of Alaskan interests in providing natural gas to Alaskans. This legislation calls on state and local governments to participate in ways that will reduce the rates Alaskans pay for natural gas. The high cost of energy is crippling the interior and rural Alaska, and it can't continue, and HB 4 is the long-term solution for Alaska. HB 4 will make low-cost energy to the citizens of Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for letting me testify.
Great. Thank you, Jim. All right. Let's go to Carl Gokey, also in Fairbanks.
Good afternoon. I'm Carl Gokey with Frontier Supply Company with stores in Fairbanks and Anchorage. We're a longtime member of the AGC, the AMA, RDC, the Alliance, and the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. I'm asking you to support House Bill 4 and to keep this project moving. If Fairbanks had connected to the Cook Inlet gas back in the day when it was discovered, I would bet the supply would have ran out a long time ago and House Bill 4 project would have already been in place. We have talked about in-state gas for Alaskans since 1950s, and here we are almost 60 years later still talking about it. The only difference is South Central had the pleasure of cheap energy, and the interior has been paying the price. We have talked about the Trans-Canada pipeline, the Nelly gas pipeline, the Energy gas line, the ASAP line, etc. How many more lines are we going to talk about before a decision is made? How long can we pay the price to live in Alaska? We're in the process of losing Eielson Air Force Base, and because of that, North Pole population is in the process of dwindling. We promised TransCanada $500 million for their project, and to date, have not heard any updates in a long time. Take the money that is still in their pot and give it to this project and have them build the line. With House Bill 4, the whole state can benefit. We are in the process with Senate Bill 23 of getting gas to Fairbanks by trucking to help reduce our energy costs, and this project will serve as a bridge to be ready when House Bill 4 project becomes operational in the next 6 years. Frontier Supply Company, again with stores in Fairbanks and Anchorage, is asking you to continue the support of House Bill 4 and to keep this train moving. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you, Carl. Appreciate your testimony. Okay, let's go to Valdez, the Valdez LIO. And looks like the first one we have there is Dave Cobb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Cobb. I'm the mayor of Valdez. Mr. Chairman and honorable committee members, we appreciate all the hard work being done in Juneau and all closing days of the session. But with your accelerated schedules this week, there's been less public notice of these opportunities to testify. Therefore, as a result, there are many who would like to provide testimony but were not able to on such short notice. Therefore, we would respectfully request that you please consider now all public testimony that was offered regarding this bill last week before the Senate Resources Committee. We thank you for your consideration on this request. The City of Valdez has vigorously opposed House Bill 4 and strive to provide critical information to the public about this very bad bill. Only one gas pipeline will be built, and we need to ensure that it is the project that provides the most benefits to all Alaskans. A large volume line to Tidewater will include offtake points, many offtake points, along the pipeline to provide natural gas directly to Alaskans, satisfy in-state energy needs. They'll also have an export component and the ability to transport natural gas liquids for value-added resources opportunities. These critical elements still generate new revenue for the state of Alaska and provide much-needed low-cost energy to all Alaskans. The small-volume approach being proposed by House Bill 4 will only raise the cost of energy in South Central Alaska and do nothing to address energy costs in rural Alaska. It is not capable of generating new revenues to offset declining oil production, simply said House Bill 4 is a short-sighted, pessimistic view of Alaska's long-term future. To support that, we settle for a to suggest that we settle for a small volume approach that only benefits a few Alaskans, shame on us. Our resources are to be developed for the benefit of all Alaskans. Make sure Alaska's future is secure and vote no on HB 4. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Cobb. Okay, John Hosey. John Hosey.
Hosey.
Okay. Very good, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Hosey. I am the city manager for the city of Valdez. Appreciate the opportunity to speak today. The city of Valdez would like to go on record as supporting and wholeheartedly agreeing with the testimony this committee will receive from Bill Walker and Craig Richards with regard to the technical flaws of HB 4 and the incredible dangers they represent to the future of our state. Therefore, please consider their testimony incorporated to ours by this reference. So, considering those technical points covered for the moment, I would like to spend a balance of my very limited time on another observation. You know, when I've listened to public testimony that has already been offered before other legislative committees this session, I hear more often than not that those urging passage of HB 4 also support, and in many cases prefer, the large volume gas plant project as well. Well, you really can only support both concepts if you subscribe to one of these following three assumptions. One, that both lines are reasonably possible, and therefore we should just get going on doing this one first. Or two, that they've given up all hope that a large line will ever happen, and therefore they're willing to sit for this inadequate project over having nothing at all. Or three, they believe that the ASAP line could eventually morph into the large volume project to include the gas liquids, the export economies of scale, and all the other necessary components currently lacking in the AGDC plan. Now, if any of these assumptions are valid, then that testimony should be taken at face value. However, I submit that these assumptions are in fact not valid. As to the first assumption about two lines being built, I have personally met with representatives of two of the three major North Slope producers, and they agreed that only one gas line of this scale will be built in the next 20 years. If ASAP is the one we choose, that will be Alaska's only gas line. To the second assumption about the dream of the large value line being dead, well, over the past several years, a great deal of work has been done, and hundreds of millions of dollars have been spent to advance a large volume gas line project through AGEA. So much so that an open season was held last fall in which letters of interest were received to purchase twice the amount of gas necessary to make a large line commercially viable. Then, just 5 months later, on February 15th of this year, all three of the major North Slope producers sent a letter to Governor Parnell stating that they have finally reached alignment on a large volume project. The stars have never before been better aligned for the right gas line to move forward, assuming, of course, we don't derail it with support of the wrong project. And then to the last assumption about ASAP somehow morphing into a good project, well, it's been said that there's no specific language in HB 4 that limits the ASAP line to a low-volume, lean gas, landlocked project. But there's neither any provisions in this bill to ensure an objective review of all project concepts and consequences before any new money is spent further developing this route-specific, low-volume, lean gas, landlocked project. It is, in fact, that specific project that the AGDC has spent millions of dollars developing already and has been selling in dozens of community presentations all up and down the rail belt. If it is now anyone's intent to somehow allow the potential of a significant shifting of gears to make possible an entirely different concept under this legislation, then that needs to be stated publicly as part of the record. It needs to be fully vetted, and it needs to be made a functional part of this legislation. Otherwise, relying on that as just a possibility within this bill provides for a severely disingenuous piece of legislation at best. I therefore offer for your consideration that any testimony on this bill that in any way references the value of or the hope for a large volume gas line to Tidewater should in fact be considered testimony in opposition to HB 4. That's because HB 4, as currently written, completely undermines any large volume project. Again, please refer to the technical points in the Walker-Richardson presentation. Okay. So in closing, please, please, do not pass this legislation out of committee without first ensuring that adequate provisions are in place to prevent the squandering of this truly once-in-a-generational opportunity. Thank you for your consideration.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hosey. Yeah, and for the folks there in Valdez, and I see there's several, Mr. Walker is coming down to Juneau tomorrow to testify, and will be given an extended amount of time to testify before the committee. Okay, let's go on now to Lisa Von Bargen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Lisa Von Bargen. And if you will, please indulge me for just a moment. I have a rather circuitous route to get to my point. I'm taking a little bit different approach to this. If it passes, Senate Bill 21 will mean an estimated reduction in annual revenue to the state of between $350 million and $1 billion. Declining throughput has already seen state oil revenue drop from over $6 billion per year to just over $4 billion. It will take a significant increase in throughput to make up this difference. Despite the financial hit to the state, a revision to ACEs being looked at as a panacea to bolster exploration and production, leading to increased throughput, which would make up the revenue shortfall. This is a very unlikely scenario based on other oil production activities in the U.S. Alaska needs to be paying attention to what is happening in the Bakken oil field. Oil from the Bakken is being shipped via rail in exponentially increasing quantities to West Coast refinery. The jump was thousands, if not tens of thousands, of rail cars full in 2012 alone. As of March 30th of this year, West Coast refineries were operating at just under 80% of capacity. Last summer, they were at 92%. The capacity was so high, tankers were returning to Alaska at least partially laden with oil they had picked up on a previous trip. Bakken crude is sweeter than ANS crude, meaning it is easier and therefore cheaper to refine, and it is cheaper to transport. At least one refinery is being built in the Bakken region, but West Coast refiners are already lining up to take orders for Bakken oil, including Tesoro. My point with all this is there refinery capacity to handle an increased TAPS throughput? Likely not. If Bakken oil is cheaper to refine and cheaper to transport, why would TAPS throughput be increased? West Coast refiners won't have the capacity to refine it. Also, it's my understanding that Bakken crude is considered stranded. At the point the stranded designation goes away, there will be an immediate impact on the price of ANS crude. It has been suggested the price of ANS crude could drop as much as $20 a barrel when this happens. My point with all of this is that the state of Alaska desperately needs a new revenue source. A large volume line to Tidewater with an export component is the only answer. Studies have shown, specifically the Wood Mackenzie report done by the Gas Line Port Authority, state that annual revenues will begin at $2.4 billion, increasing with production up to $24 billion annually. Every resource the state has should be put toward development of a large volume line. The state will not have the money, based on the things that I've discussed and other declining issues, to take on a project such as this. Please don't waste time with the bullet line. Please don't waste time with House Bill 4. Vote no on House Bill 4. It is your legacy to Alaskans. Thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thank you, Lisa. Okay, Mike Wells.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mike Wells. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I come before you today to encourage you to vote no on House Bill 4. The ASAP project, as proposed under HB 4, is the wrong plan for Alaska. Proponents suggest that it will bring immediate, affordable energy to the interior and South Central. However, this project will take many years to complete, and the small diameter line simply does not have the economy of scale to provide energy as feasibly as a large volume pipeline to Tidewater. Alaska must generate income through the sale of its gas. We need the long-term job opportunities and value-added industry provided through valuable gas liquids development. These benefits are crucial to the future of Alaska and vital to offsetting declining oil production. HB 4 promotes a project that fails to provide these key returns to Alaskans and falls short on spreading Alaska's resource benefits to all, not just those who are geographically advantaged. HB 4 limits the Alaska. HB 4 limits the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation from judicial review and public oversight critical to protecting consumers. Transparency and the checks and balances that come with it are vital to protecting Alaskans. There is strong statewide support for a large volume pipeline from the North Slope to a deep water port with an LNG export component. This is and always will be the best choice for our state. Unfortunately, a vote for HB 4 may stop this from ever becoming a reality, as the likelihood of building two large gas line projects is remote. Let's stay focused on the best project for Alaska. And Senators, Alaska needs your leadership now to stand up for a gas line project that provides the maximum resource benefit to all. Please vote no on House Bill 4, and I thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you, Mike, for your testimony. Another Mike, Mike Williams.
I'd like bad legislation for 1,000, please. What is House Bill 4? So I think House Bill 4 is kind of bad legislation for a number of reasons. One is the what's been talked about before, and that is the lack of new revenue to the state of Alaska. The small line won't give us the revenue that we need from the larger line. But it's being sold by Mike and his co-sponsor. Reading from his website, they also say that, also note that we would still have the ability to tax any gas not used in state, which is why ideally the ASAP line would include an export component that would return revenue to the state. So while the legislation doesn't call for it, they're out there selling it as an export line. It doesn't bring any of the liquids down, the propanes. And so, but also they're still out there selling that fact. They're talking about, again, off their website. So the current intent in them doesn't justify the higher construction costs required to ship the liquids and would add a punitive cost to Alaskans who need gas. However, if the market changes between today and the open season, AGDEC is able to adjust the plan accordingly and provide these in-state, bring these liquids down. But what they haven't done is they still haven't allocated true cost any of that. If you're going to add an export component and add propane, you're going to have to add to the size of the line. And you're going to add to the size of the line, you're going to have to add to the cost. If you're going to add an export component, you have to have some type of liquefaction facility. That's going to add to the cost. When you add those to the cost, like our second speaker spoke about, you're going to add to the debt service, which is going to simply increase the cost to Alaskans for the gas that they get. And if you believe for a minute that you can make an export facility solely on the backs of the coastal communities and be able to provide some form of propane that is even close to the price they're paying now, is just ridiculous. You're not going to do it with that small amount. That would be like building a gas station and only selling gas to your employees. You'll never service the debt. You don't have the volume. You have to have the large volume pipeline. You have to export it so that you bring in revenue to the state, that you have economies of scale to provide cheap gas to the people along the route and the people along the coastal communities. You'll never get cheap gas to the coastal communities with a small line. And with that said, the existing legislation is bad for other reasons. It's exempt from the Open Meetings Act. It's exempt from oversight of RCA. The board can dispose of assets with only four votes. ADC is going to make their own rates. I just don't see this. We had another caller that said that supported it and says it's going to be driven on the attitude of the board. So you want to base hundreds of millions of dollars on the attitude of four people when they wake up on the wrong side of the bed? That's what we're going to have. We're going to have four people trying to determine your legacy. I don't think that's what you want. I do agree that in-state gas is important to everybody, but I really think that House Bill 4 is the wrong choice. I've lived in Alaska for 53 years. I wasn't born here, but I've chose to be here for 53 years of my life. And I've watched the natural gas lines proposals. I've watched Trans-Alaska oil pipeline a good model. And I think that you really need to not even pass this out of committee. I think you should kill it here. That's my recommendation, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony, Mike. Okay, Lynn Crystal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lynn Crystal. I have just shy of 50 years in Alaska. I've lived in places as diverse as Tin City, Barrow, Yakutat, and Valdez. I'm a former mayor of Valdez, however, today I'm representing myself only. And I hate to harp on the issue, but this is so important. Alaska is such a small market, and we need large amounts of customers to pay for this thing. I guess the big thing is, how will the bullet line be paid for? Since it's obvious that the number of customers available in Alaska will not be anywhere near enough to pay for the line, the state of Alaska will be expected to come up with the money. Folks along the existing gas grid already enjoy the lowest energy cost in Alaska, and this line will require the rest of the state to pony up more and receive nothing in return. How can you, in good conscience, look your fellow Alaskans in the eye and support this white elephant? The USGS feels very strongly there's large amounts of gas still existing in Cook Inlet, and I understand there's a couple rigs out there looking right now. So are we likely just wasting our money and time on trying to develop this small gas line? The worst case scenario in my mind is this thing gets voted through, goes under construction, spends billions of dollars of state money, and large amounts of very cheap gas are found at the same time in Cook Inlet. What happens then? What do you do with the line? It's not economical because you got lots of cheap gas. It reminds me, back in the early 50s, reading some history lessons, the committee that was pushing statehood for Alaska went back to Washington, D.C. They got shot down by President Eisenhower and the entire Congress. So 49 folks, they were really counting on statehood, were in this very dejected state coming back to Alaska on a chartered DC-4 from Alaska Airlines. Senator Bob Bartlett wrote them a short note. He said that great legislative issues are not always resolved on the basis of merit, and to keep going. The committee kept going, and we did become a state. We shouldn't give up on the big line, the one that makes the most sense. So please bring merit to this issue and do what's best for all of Alaska. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Lynn. Okay, Sherry Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to disclose that I'm testifying as a member of the public, but it's important for me to tell you that I've served 23 years as a municipal clerk, dedicating to providing transparency in government to the public that my local government officials serve. I do not support the passage of HB 4 for many reasons. However, my primary concern is Article 4, Public Records Investigations, Section 42.08400 in the bill. A states that except as provided in B and C of this section or prohibited from disclosure under state or federal law, records in the possession of the commission are open to public inspection at reasonable times. So let me address Section B, Section C, and Section B, which was not referred to under Section A. B, the commission may by regulation classify records received from an in-state natural gas pipeline carrier or in-state natural gas pipeline as privileged records that are not open to the public for inspection. C is more specific in defining a precedent agreement between an in-state natural gas pipeline carrier and an unregulated entity as a privileged record that is not open for public inspection. However, it goes on to further allow for a record that relates to a precedent agreement or is or relates to a contract other than a precedent agreement to be classified as confidential if an in-state natural gas pipeline carrier identifies to the commission the provisions of the records that, if disclosed, could adversely affect the competitive position of the shipper or could cause commercial or competitive harm or damage if disclosed. D, however, is most alarming to me. D states that a person may make written objection to the public disclosure of information contained in a record filed under this chapter or of information obtained by the Commission or the Attorney General under this chapter, stating the grounds for objection. When an objection is made, the Commission shall order the information withheld from public disclosure if the information adversely affects the interests of the person making written objection and disclosure is not required in the interest of the public. I'm most confused and disappointed by language included in this bill, which serves to so severely restrict the disclosure of records and information regarding this project from the public and could serve to prevent the disclosure of any personal financial interest in this project by a legislator, a state commissioner, a state employee, or a member of the proposed regulatory commission. Thank you so much for listening to my comments.
Sherry, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Dave Dingell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dave Dingell. I want to thank you for providing me with the opportunity to testify in HB 4 today. House Bill 4 is a dangerous diversion that draws attention and resources away from the gas pipeline that Alaska truly needs and voters approved more than a decade ago. HB 4 is a diversion masquerading as a solution. HB 4 focuses on promoting a gas line that is designed to be a low-volume line, leaving valuable liquids on the North Slope. This gas line does not generate significant revenues that can finance its own construction or contribute to future state general fund program requirements, nor does it address the energy crisis in this state. Alaskans are hungry for real action on a gas line now. HB 4 is designed to make voters feel like Juneau is doing something, but in reality, HB 4 sacrifices our long-term energy and fiscal future for short-term political gain. As you heard before, during today's testimony, only one multi-billion dollar gas line will be built in Alaska in the next 20 years. If we allow the ASAP line to be the chosen project, we lose the promise of a gas line plan Alaskans approved in 2002. A gas line that generates revenue, creates jobs, and provides affordable energy for all Alaskans all over the state. You need to do the right thing for Alaskans today and for future generations of Alaskans. I ask you, do not pass House Bill 4, but instead keep Alaska focused on the large diameter pipeline to Tidewater. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Okay. Jeremy O'Neill.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. It's good to be with you. My name is Jeremy O'Neill. I'm an attorney and a certified public accountant in the state, a third-generation Alaskan. I grew up in Fox, Alaska. My backyard was the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. I recall many occasions riding my single-speed bicycle to the Goldstream Road where the pipeline comes from the north down a hillside, goes under the road, pops up, and continues its way south. And the many occasions sitting there just in awe of the engineering marvel that it has, and looking back 30 years later of the many benefits that the state has been provided by the deliberations and the good choices that were made by the legislature and the people at that time. I'm very concerned with House Bill 4. I'm afraid that no longer will this generation benefit from a government so generously funded as the government has been in my lifetime. Certainly the schools that I've been able to attend, the roads and the other public services have been top-notch. Now that is in jeopardy, and certainly the questions that are facing the legislature at this time should be focused keenly on those actions that will best benefit the state as a whole. I'm a little troubled by the use of the term all Alaskans by the proponents of HB 4. I'm confused because I fail to see any benefit outside of the rail belt. And certainly there is a huge energy crisis going on outside of Fairbanks. the rail belt in Anchorage. Another concern I have is with the invisible hand analogy that is being used by the proponents. And certainly if any of you are students of Adam Smith, I would assume he'd be rolling in his grave if he heard it was being so loosely used by the proponents. It contemplates people making choices to their maximum benefit. And if anybody looks deep into the numbers, or even if you look shallow into these numbers, you'll find that a low-volume pipeline, which only benefits the small economic population of the state, is in no means the best choice for all of Alaska. I'm deeply concerned for my children who represent the fourth generation. The economics of HB4 do not sell the project. The fact that it leaves nearly half of this state still wanting for an energy solution is troubling. And certainly I also think there's a constitutional argument that can be made against this, as it is not to the maximum benefit of all the people. And I do not look fondly on the day when one might be driving down the park's highway, cursing aloud as they see the boondoggle that will remind them all 360 miles from Fairbanks to Anchorage of the poor decision that was made when HB4 was passed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jeremy. Okay, I think that is everybody in Valdez. So let me go off net here now. We've had some people waiting for a while. Jim Sykes in Palmer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you pretty well. Maybe speak up, or can we turn up the volume?
Okay, is this a little better?
That's better. Yeah, that's good, Jim.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and thanks for the opportunity to testify. My name is Jim Sykes from Palmer. I am speaking for myself. As part of my energy background, I served on the Alaska Energy Authority's Rail Belt Advisory Committee for their integrated resource plans that looked at 50 years, and I followed oil and gas closely for the past 25, including being a consumer advocate and executive director of the state's largest consumer organization. As a longtime advocate for Alaska's gas, I urge you in the strongest terms not to pass HB4. While natural gas will be part of our energy mix, a small volume pipeline, and stacked up with all other options, continues to come in dead last. The thrust of the proposal seems to be to build a small pipeline at the lowest possible cost. However, do not confuse lowest possible cost with reasonable cost. Alaska consumers could be forced to pay some of the highest gas rates in the entire world. Only the owners are likely to make out well on this, not the consumers of natural gas. The plan leaves out valuable gas liquids. It's not expandable to help bring no-slope gas to market, and it's not a short-term solution to our current energy problems. Others have spoken about the lack of public accountability, and I too think this is a terrible problem. It exempts the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation from public records laws and the RCA. It effectively removes the checks and balances the people, the governor, the legislature come to expect for a publicly funded project. Short term, we have options for the rail belt. We can import LNG for delivery by truck, a rail module. Approval to truck LNG from the North Slope to Fairbanks needs to be funded. All of these viable projects can be built significantly faster and cheaper than ASAP, and it will allow the Cook Inlet gas that is going to be developed and found to come to fruit. The state of Alaska can also pursue the large diameter gas pipeline that can economically be provided to Alaskans. Also, please note, the new federal EIA update on Lower 48 gas imports to the United States fell 50% since 2008. Prices fell from almost $5 per MCF to below $2 recently. Actually, I expect we'll be able to import American LNG fairly cheaply, much more cheaply than we ever previously thought, if we need it. So I heartily thank you for wrestling with this problem, but HB4 is definitely not the answer. And I'll do my best to answer any questions if you have them to ask. And thanks again for the opportunity to testify.
Great. I don't see any questions, Jim, but thank you for staying with us today and testifying. Okay, let's go again off net. I think Rick Boyle's hung up, correct? So I apologize to Rick. Maybe somebody else from the Teamsters would like to testify. But hold on, Barb. Oh, she's leaving. Okay, let's go off net here to Jerry Clayworth.
Hi, this is Jerry Clayworth. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I am the mayor of the city of Fairbanks here, and we're thanking you for the opportunity to testify, maybe a little different than what you've just been hearing. Our city council stands on record as being in favor of House Bill 4. We have appreciated the updates that the folks have given us over the last couple years, their meetings to town and keeping the state informed. We're excited about the prospect of continuing the one line that seems to have a head of steam. We would all like to see, a large diameter line. We've talked about that since the 50s and 60s, and we still haven't made any progress in that direction. Finally, we have something we're working on now. A lot of the legwork has been done, and it would be, I think, unfortunate to stop that progress from continuing, from doing that. That's basically it. I know that you folks have received resolutions from the City of Kenai, Associated General Contractors, the Alliance, and so on and so forth. But there is a lot of support for it, despite what I've just heard in the short time I've been listening here.
Okay. Great. Mayor, I appreciate you testifying today.
Thank you.
And I think Barbara Huff was going to get Mr. Boyle back online, but don't have it yet. So we'll go to Luke Hopkins from Fairbanks. Luke, are you with us, sir?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I am Luke Hopkins, mayor in the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And yes, I know there's a great deal of testimony all around about a gas line. And I do know that a few weeks ago we were down in Juneau, and our assembly member commented that the assembly passed a priority for our community that an in-state gas pipeline to support that, and that it will deliver gas to the interior and other regions of the state, ensuring long-time cost-effective fuel and energy throughout the state. And I do know that I've been in the midst of the big gas line discussions. I was on the Port Authority board, and understand that that if that pipeline were to go, that certainly would be very beneficial for the state. The issue that's at hand right now is that I know that it's the issue of how do we get a pipeline as quick as we can, and I see that there's legislation for an in-state line, large diameter, possibly 36-inch diameter, whatever it might end up being. But seeing the writing on the wall, I do have some concerns with what HB4 does. You've heard you've heard those stories before. But in the end, where the money gets put and what gets moved forward for our community, I have a concern that that we look for a solution to our cost of energy here, and after trucking comes a gas pipeline, and that's what we need to do for our community, for our economy. And I guess I probably should have reversed that order: for our economy, for our community. So I thank you for this opportunity to testify.
All right, thank you, Mayor. Appreciate the testimony. Okay, I don't know that I have anybody else online okay. We're going to extend an offer here to Barbara Huff, and if she wants to speak on behalf of the Teamsters, and I think they went out to find her. So let's just take a brief at ease, and if nobody shows up in the next couple minutes, then we'll just adjourn. Brief at ease. Okay, we're going to come back on go ahead and close the public testimony, except that we are going to invite Barbara Huff with the Teamsters, because the Teamsters representative was not able to stay on the whole time. So, but I'll close the public hearing, and we'll just do some invited testimony here in Juneau. So, Barbara, are you ready to pitch in for your? Was he your boss? Yeah, Rick's your boss. Yes. Okay. All right. The pressure's on. So, if you could, for the record, state your name and affiliation.
Mr. Chairman, members of Senate Finance, I want to go on record thanking each and every one of you for our opportunity to testify regarding House Bill 4. I do not have any prepared comments. Those were supposed to have been forwarded to me as well. But for the record, my name is Barbara Huff-Tuckness. I'm Director of Governmental and Legislative Affairs for Teamsters Local 959. And just in general conversation, we have had participants basically in every single one of the committee hearings. I think the due diligence on the part of Senate Finance, especially with the information that was presented Saturday and Sunday, the many questions I think asked and answered of the committee members by the various presenters, I think was very valuable, hopefully very valuable in your decision. We would like to go on record supporting HB 4. Many of us have lived in the state for over 30 years, have heard the discussions about a gas pipeline of some sort. We still have not seen it. We do believe, based on the information that's been presented, that this is a step forward, and we encourage Senate Finance to move the bill out. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barbara. You did a good job filling in for your boss. Okay. All right. That's all the testimony today. I know we had some interest in maybe hearing some other invited testimony tomorrow. The names that I was given was Harold Hines, who did testify today. He actually testified in support of the bill. Larry Pursley, it's my understanding, cannot testify since he's working at the federal level on gas and gas issues. The other names given was Mark Myers and Bill Walker. Bill Walker, we have made contact, and he's actually going to fly in tomorrow. So we'll hear from him, probably give him 30 minutes or however amount of time that he needs. And then at the same time, we'll have the sponsor either agree or disagree with whatever Mr. Walker has to say. Certainly a lot of interest here from the city of Valdez, and we heard from several people there from the city of Valdez. And in my understanding, too, that Bill Walker is also representing the city of Valdez. So I think they will be well represented in this deliberation of House Bill 4. Any other questions from members? Yes, Senator Faircliffe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering if I could ask Rena Delbridge to come to the microphone.
Yep. Just for the record, I think I did announce Speaker Chenault was here, and also Representative Hawker is here as well, and now his trusty staff is before us. Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Faircliffe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm highlighted two different folks who testified. One indicated that she was a municipal clerk, and I was trying to find in the bill where she was making reference, because she started with Section 4, and again, I have a hard time. I don't take shorthand, and so I write as fast as I can, and she said Article 4. And the only place in the bill that I could see articles in reference to was on page 24. There was an Article 3. So I was trying to find Article 4, but then it went to Section 4, so I could never find what she was talking about or reading from. And so I didn't know if you could please provide any insight or take it away for tomorrow so that you could come back and talk to me about not allowing public scrutiny was the other takeaway that I had written down in her comments.
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, for the record, I'm Rena Delbridge, staff to Representative Hawker.
You will find the section that I believe that the woman was referring to on page 51 of the bill. It's in the RCA section. This actually has the effect of declaring that records filed before the RCA are public records, except for the precedent agreements, which are filed under seal as they are contractual negotiations underway until those conditions that might be placed on one are ironed out. The precedent agreements at that point evolve into firm transportation service agreements, at which point they also automatically become public with the RCA, fully open to public inspection. There is a provision that if there is commercially sensitive information, basically if it could competitively harm the position of the shipper within that, then that portion can be redacted. But the RCA has to agree essentially that yes, that is commercially sensitive information that should be redacted. This is, you'll see it often with other RCA filings. There is certain information, particularly in things like a certificate of public convenience and necessity hearing, that is pretty sensitive commercial private information, and that portion is redacted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I might,
sure.
Ms. Delbridge, we had several people who testified that were indicating that there was lack of RCA oversight, and as I understand it, as the bill comes to us, there is a new provision that provides at least 3 months for the RCA to review the recourse tariff rates, and then provides an additional 3 months if they can't get through those documents. Could we just put that on the record quickly?
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, the bill includes a multi-stage, multiple levels of RCA scrutiny of different phases of the carrier's applications as it progresses through its commercial contracts. And you are correct, there is that period for the initial recourse tariff review. There's also the CPCN or building certificate process. There is also the review of the precedent agreements. The sponsors believe a very strong regulatory framework. However, it is different from the kind of regulatory framework that generally is used for public utilities.
Mr. Chairman, two things to bring back tomorrow. I don't need those today. There was a reference, again, from someone who testified about providing inside of the bill that we see now an amendment that would eliminate, to put an elimination clause in, should we be unsuccessful in our pursuit to go forward, that it would sweep in at some particular point in time. At least that's what I thought I heard. If other committee members didn't hear that the same, please add it to the record. But an elimination clause. And with that, Mr. Chairman, the other one had to do with the 2011 Port Authority report, and I didn't know. I guess a general question is, with all of the gas that's available in the lower 48, I find it interesting that some people continue to believe that the large diameter pipe might still be viable to us, including in an export market. I know I saw an email from Larry Pursley earlier today talking about the Japanese moving into at least a look-see over in a Canadian gas market to look at development there. And so we don't have a project yet to even offer that, but we have had a pretty good initial request of interest. Is that the right frame?
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, AGDC's project, as proposed, could in fact include an export component. However, that is not required, and that's going to be up to, again, those buyers and sellers of gas that want to have it shipped. It will be up to those people to negotiate contracts with other markets if they're going to export the fuel. There, I think you've heard from the miners and other folks, too, that there very well could be sufficient anchors in in-state use. This is not contingent upon that. I think that there's a lot going on right now in the export markets where certainly the lower 48 does have an awful lot of gas to export. It looks like they'll be able to do that pretty soon. Obviously, there's Asian markets that are available. There's people that believe a number of different things. Alaska may find a great niche market in some of these countries for smaller volumes of gas.
Mr. Chairman, I absolutely would love to export. The only other comment I have is that
the price of gas versus the price of oil is very different in what it will return to Alaska, no matter what we have. And with the AGEA umbrella, it's impossible for that to be a very large number, at least certainly from the reports that I've reviewed.
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, are you, if I may, looking at the potential revenue benefits to the state of export versus some other? I believe some of the estimates on the value to the state treasury of export pipeline gas were based upon the ACES tax system, which I think most have an understanding was never actually, the gas portion of that was never actually set, assuming that there would be gas. The assumption has always been that the state would need to reset a gas tax if there was to be any development. And in fact, under the ACES system, if you did have significant volumes of gas that you were taxing, you would perhaps be bringing in those revenues on gas because of that artificial gas tax. But those would also be able to be offset against your current oil production tax due, putting the state in a bit of a precarious position that way. I believe you've all heard that in your testimony and your other committees. The governor's been quite clear as far as a large export project goes that if and when they have a project on the table, that he will need to see the economics of that, and at that point engage in fiscal discussions for a production tax.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Faircloth. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I had queried Harold Hines about getting additional language in here, and I know the on page 7 we talk about under the purpose line 17 to get gas to all communities in the state, but to keep that, because this is going to be such a long working document, he had suggested that we get the commitment or state to the board of directors that it is their commitment to continue to work to get gas to all Alaskans. And if the sponsor agrees with that, I was wondering if we could come up with some language to that effect.
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, I'm happy to discuss that with the sponsors. I would imagine that some intent language expressing the will of how the legislature expects the board to carry out these duties in addressing the other possible needs of the state would probably be quite acceptable to them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Olson?
I just want to express my thankfulness to the both sponsors, at least the staff member, for being even looking down this direction. So I appreciate you looking into that for us.
Okay, very good. Okay, I think the plan for tomorrow, and I would like to get feedback here from committee members. I believe I'd like to have a little more in-depth discussion on the RCA oversight. And so is Department of Law, is that who normally does the RCA oversight, or do we have somebody from RCA? I'll ask the sponsor how that's been done in the past.
Mr. Chairman, to date, the RCA, I believe, has I believe you would need to ask them if they're willing as a quasi-judicial body to come and weigh in on pending legislation that sets their policy. Mm. The Department of Law's attorney for the RCA, Stuart Gehring, has been available for questions.
Okay, very good. I don't believe he's online today, is he? Okay. Well, we'll make sure he's online tomorrow. Also, tomorrow, then, we'll have two expert witnesses. We'll have one or two from the sponsor of the bill. I think it'll be Mike and Mike, and then we'll have Bill Walker here as well. So that should be interesting discussion, just hearing both sides there. And then since we have the Finance Committee, I would like to dive into the fiscal notes a little bit more and make sure we thoroughly understand those. Will you be able to do that, or do we have somebody else to assist with the fiscal notes, Serena?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, both myself and Representative Hawker can help address those, and I believe that Frank Richards would be very instrumental in that, or very valuable in that conversation. If you'd like to do that tomorrow, I can see if he'll be back in Juneau or at least available on the phone.
Okay. Who was that again? I'm sorry.
Frank Richards.
Frank. Oh, yes.
AGDC.
Yes. Yes, and actually Frank was on the line today.
I
should have mentioned that. I don't think he wanted to testify. He was, yeah. Okay. Very good. Yeah, and then also after today's testimony, if there's some possible amendments that the committee members would like to consider, I would like to talk to you about that as well. And I think we did get one from Senator Hoffman just a little while ago. So if there's any others, that would be good, so we could at least kind of see what the committee members are thinking about. All right. Any other discussion? If not, then we'll be hearing a bunch of bills in the morning. I don't have my list, but do we have a list of what we're hearing tomorrow? Yeah. Okay. We're hearing a bunch of bills tomorrow. That's about all I know. Yeah, a couple bills previously heard, and then there's some new ones. They'll be getting word of which ones will be coming up, so we don't need to do that. All right, so if there's nothing else, then we'll stand adjourned until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.